Roughly, India clocks almost 2 lakh cases of suicide per year, of which 75% or so are men. All boys grow up expecting that they have no choice but to earn money for the family. Mental illness amongst men is rather undiagnosed or semi-diagnosed. A sense of bravado amongst men that nothing can happen to me. Mujhe kuch nahi hoga. You look at any lower to middle income household, even higher income household, there is a natural expectation on men to be primary earners is absolutely obvious.
Yeah, I'm just looking at this screen also, a little bit of follow-up. Is this got to do with our evolution where men have always gone out to get food? On living.
I'm the fortunate one here, but I've seen a lot of my friends, a lot of men who actually face the same situation. So what's your take on it and how do we as men keep our sanity alive?
Hi Shantanu.
Hi, how are you?
Very good.
And if we have only boys on this call, it might not be your most productive call. So
that's who we have here today.
Oh, really? We have zero women on the call?
No women on the call.
Jesus Christ. Like by design or by chance?
By choice, yes.
I don't think we should do this without women, I think. There are a bunch of women on the organizing team. I was surprised. Like, they were the most enthused about this session. Ananta and Chetna. Shriya, Ananta, Chetna. These three are most enthused about the session.
Yeah. Should we quickly call?
Just
extend the invite?
Yeah, absolutely.
Give me a minute.
By the way, I hope that after I've set the context, like, then there should be no inhibitions after that for sure. Because I would hopefully have said all the things that people find uncomfortable to say. So
by design, we wanted this to be an all-boys zone. It was very intentional.
Okay. No, that's okay. That's totally okay.
But I'm extending the invitation to everybody at Go Quick now. Just give me 2 minutes and I think we'll...
Yeah.
A very warm welcome to all of you here today. A very good evening. Hope you've had a great Wednesday so far. And a big thank you to Shantanu. Thanks for joining in. As you all know, it's International Men's Day. And I'm sorry if you've not gotten your chocolates, but we got you something better for this day today. We got you Shantanu. He's somebody who leads the talk. He walks it. He's a great example in the space that has helped people understand and redefine masculinity. I think people have now, you know, started talking about grooming, have started talking about self-care. Men have put their priorities first and as well as, you know, embraced a softer side to themselves while taking responsibilities for the women in their lives, for supporting them and enabling them. So thank you, Shantanu. We couldn't think of anyone better to be part of this session today and speak with the men and women of Go Quick and talk about redefining masculinity. So thanks for being part of it.
Thank you so much. What a privilege to be back. I had come during your Delhi strategy and sales get-together workshop, which was great. I think there we spoke about what startups can learn from athletes and elite athletes and elite sportsmen and women. And today it's a totally different discussion for Men's Day, but something that is important for Bombay Shaving Company, given our core consumer group, something that is important in the world in general, given what we are seeing socially, economically, in our own families, friends, and ourselves. I did not know that this session was only supposed to be for men, or maybe I must have missed it on the WhatsApp group. But I have taken the liberty, and Chirag is kind enough to allow me to do that, of also calling in all the women of Go Quick, because I think fundamentally this is a topic of interest for everyone and one of action for everyone also, because even if you may not be a man, you will definitely have a father or a brother or a husband or a son or a friend or cousin or so many men in your life who you care about, who you love, who you want to see succeed and be happy. So, and it's our role to understand also. Sometimes the support system is important. So, okay, I'm going to share my screen. So today's document is about, you know, being a man in 2026, understanding codes of masculinity, to be comfortable in your own skin as a man, something that it might sound obvious and natural, and maybe that way for many of us, but surprisingly, is becoming more and more difficult given a world of multiple signals, multiple conflicting points of view, where sometimes we are, you know, men find themselves in positions where they question very core assumptions, which may be existential in nature also. So today, wanted to just kind of at least voice them out so that there is a starting point, which is from where we can kind of get collective understanding and move forward. And then some startling facts that trickle from male disposability, right? And men on average have between 5 to 6 years lesser life than women, given an 80-year lifespan. That is roughly almost a 7 to 8% lesser lifespan than women. Medically, something that has been unresearched for the most part. There are some loose connections between estrogen and longevity, but those are still not researched to the extent that they should be. Across the world, across socioeconomic strata, across time periods, in general, natural lives also, and obviously because of, you know, wars and so on, men on average have tended to live a lot lesser than women, and to a statistically significant amount. Two of India's biggest killers, cardiovascular disease and diabetes, both affect men on average 4 to 6% higher than women, just ethnically because of smaller arteries. Indians have generally a larger disposition to both of these, but men have a much higher disposition to women compared to women. When it comes to, for example, suicides, it's a very, very sensitive topic. Roughly India clocks almost 2 lakh cases of suicide per year. Of which 75% or so are men. In general, mental illness amongst men is a rather undiagnosed or semi-diagnosed symptom issue, because symptoms are anger, withdrawal, overwork, and a sense of bravado amongst men that nothing can happen to me. Mujhe kuch nahi hoga, right? And I can see some smiling faces. I'm sure it happens to us. We see it happen with, you know, with men in our life. It's not just personality. It's deeper than that. Men visit doctors 50% lesser than women, delaying treatment till symptoms become severe. Across, you know, if you look at, keep all else equal, whether you know, across economic class, access to medical facilities, etc., all else equal, men will delay the doctor visit much more than men. And healthcare budgets are tremendously around women healthcare, especially around infant mortality and infant health. We in general have a very small healthcare budget as a percentage of our GDP. So anyways, there is a significant, a lot of that is mostly towards women and children. And hence, you will see that, women and children typically get off the Titanic first. Men tend to stay back. There is a lot of this kind of trickles into our behaviors, our ability to delay doctor visits, trivialize illness, etc., until it becomes too much. Over the last 2-3 years, we are seeing a lot of men in the 35 to 45 age group also fall prey to heart attacks. So a lot of this, it seeps into the way our insurance is structured. It seeps into the way our healthcare is structured. It seeps into the way our mindsets are structured. So this is like striking stuff, right? And the fact that we don't have discussions about it is absolutely insane to me. But this is the truth. Society isn't easy on men, okay? And I'll just take you through some just broad observations. Because 80 to 90% of Indian families rely on the male income. Men typically, especially India as a young country post-independence and significantly agrarian, where going into the farms, etc., is something that happens from 5 in the morning. Typically, children grow up with fathers who are away for work. And predominantly have female teachers in school growing up. This is something that Chirag and I discussed yesterday on the podcast also. So near zero male role models for boys growing up till the age of 14, 15, 16. Whatever role modeling or father presence is there, if you see just general social narrative is one around being strict, or where relationship with the father is broken, or daddy issues exist. These are all very real things, and they stem from a combination of these factors. So that's a problem that needs to be solved for girls. For boys, I think once they find access to male role models, if you see, for example, IIT JEE results or NEET results or competitive exams, where 11th, 12th standard, suddenly there are male teachers in the coaching class, or access to male role models through seniors increases through college, you'll see boys flourishing a lot more, where they have, you know, they have the ease of kind of absorbing a lot of their energy, and context switching load goes down significantly. So till 10th, I think school design is also difficult for men. In general, all boys grow up expecting that they have no choice but to earn money for the family. If you look at any lower to middle income household, even higher income household, the fact that there is a natural expectation on men to be primary earners is absolutely obvious. Men lose social circles rapidly after marriage because men are people who men develop relationships through activity, women develop relationships through communication. So if you look at any married couple 10-15 years into the marriage, you will see that the social circle is typically tending more towards the woman's social circle, whether it's teachers of children in school or whether it is the family or whether it is friends. Because men rely on activity a lot more and women rely on communication, women are able to maintain social bonds through frequent catch-ups, phone calls, WhatsApp communication. Men find that a lot harder. Men typically bond over sports or hobbies or even of, you know, boys trips, etc. Just generally, family courts, legal frameworks are not male-friendly. Typically, the entire legal system is innocent till proven guilty. But when it comes to men, and frankly, I think stereotypes are never given, they're earned. So it's not like this is a wrong thing. But given that stereotypes affect n equal to one samples because of the larger group, custody issues or financial responsibilities are significantly loaded onto men a lot more. Therapy as a tool is not as effective for men. I think there is now enough literature on this where therapy is more a tool for sharing and less a tool for solving. And for women, for example, where sharing, communication, mental models around emotion are around just collective sharing of an issue and understanding and empathy, while men actually are index a lot more on solving of an issue. Men withdraw. They don't like discussing it. They don't like thread-bearing issues. A lot of times, this is kind of almost seen as toxic behavior where people say men are not in touch with their emotions. It's not the case. It's just different in the way they approach a particular situation. Also, 80 to 85% of therapists are women. And hence, almost a lot of male, men who go to therapies leads to dissonance, leads to an experience that feels unnatural. The whole ecosystem is actually built to not solve for it the way it should be solved for, right? Any conversation around men, so for the example, the last 10-15 minutes might have made some of you uncomfortable because there is always a proclivity to assume that these conversations are anti-women, especially in the horizon of the very needed feminist movement that the world has seen over the last 15 years around pay gap, around representation, around rights. So any discussion on men always seems like a counter pendulum to that discussion, but it's not the case. I think both men and women have issues that are gender that are rooted in their gender and rooted in patriarchy, because patriarchy has created disservice for modern men and modern women both in different ways, right? So it's not easy to be a man from the time you are a boy till the time you retire. There are issues, the world does not have the tools yet to solve for those. And the world is also in a place where discussing them almost seems apologetic in nature. So, hey, it's not easy. In some cases, racial stereotypes is where it also happens. But for men, it actually, the numbers are actually staggering. Okay, it's, there are, the numbers suggest that at a healthcare level, at a mental level, at a social level, life is not easy. There is little recognition of that. So what do you do? I think idea is to be self-aware. I think finding work beyond work and money unapologetically is something super critical. Men typically don't say no as much as they should, especially around things that might make them uncomfortable. So drawing boundaries. Friendships are critical. The three-man circle, they call it. You don't need 500 friends. You need two. And doing activities, finding hobbies, playing sport, whatever you can do with your at least two friends, I think is super critical for men. If you have men in your life who you know are loners or who you know don't have a lot of friends, it's a recipe for disaster. So physical activity for men is crucial. Like any physical activity, running, lifting, cycling, whatever, go to the gym, play a sport, whatever is needed is super critical. And frankly, I think build the muscle to express. I think men struggle with structured expression. Men don't struggle anymore as much with emotional regulation, but I think a lot of men need to start getting in touch with who they are and what they want, and actually not feel guilty about wanting something or needing something and expressing that to their partner, their parent, their child, their sibling, their friend, their colleague, their boss. I think a lot of it kind of stays inside. We men tend to withdraw a lot. And I think one of the learnings that if anyone is, you know, whoever's watching, if you feel this has resonated, I think if you wanted to go away with one thing, I think don't be apologetic about expressing what might work for you in any situation. So, yeah, I wanted to kind of at least lay it out there in terms of what being a man in 2026 looks like. But very happy to pick up questions, make this more interactive.
I think your honest discussion on the guilt of masculinity and the need to embrace structured expression has set a fantastic stage for our Q&A. What we've done, actually, we've compiled through a survey top 5 questions from our employees that I think align well with the themes that you've discussed, particularly around, you know, mental and emotional strength. So we'll just dive in. The question is, Shantanu, what stereotypes about masculinity have you personally had to unlearn in your journey?
Yeah, so, it's very hard, because we are half the population, it's very hard to have discussions around stereotypes fundamentally. I think it's very important to know what are the traits of masculinity that define masculinity, which are very masculine in nature. Independence. This is something, by the way, we've seen species outside of human beings also, right? Some are good traits, some are not so good traits. But I think masculine traits are around discipline, action, assertiveness, strength. These are traits of masculinity, and they then become stereotypes over a period of time, right? So the trait of strength is basically quality men will make sure that, you know, their family is protected from external harm, or that they're always financially resourced. But strength then gets confused for men don't cry, or men don't take medical help, right? And that's where you have to make the distinction. I would strongly, urge people to say, what is the trait, and hence what is the stereotype, and then kind of focus on the trait itself, be self-aware about it, and then work on it. So I think, for example, men show strength is then weirdly wonky into men don't cry. By the way, we have seen so many marketing campaigns around men should cry. Who is crying? Crying is not the most natural expression for men. It's very strange to browbeat a man into crying, because that's how you express yourself. The idea of expression is so that the person expresses in the way that is most comfortable to them. Sure, it may be crying for some, but for some it is not. For many men, it is actually about trivializing the issue in a group of 3-4 people. Like, frankly, for me, every time I have faced an issue which has made me sad or made me distressed, I have gone to my 2-3 closest friends who have trivialized the issue, made it feel more normal, made it feel like I'm not at fault in their own fun way. Right? If someone would have come and told me, you need to cry, I don't think that would have helped at all. That is not something. And I can speak on behalf of at least 10 men who I know very deeply and intimately that's not how it works. So I think traits are important. Stereotypes, we are too many people to have stereotypes which define us. So that's my short answer on this one.
Modern men today, right, carry a lot of silent pressure, right, to succeed, to provide, to stay strong. How should we personally deal with internal pressure and overwhelm? And what advice would you give to men who struggle to express their emotions and feel the need to handle everything on their own?
I think the fact that this question is being asked itself is a great thing. I think it's important to be aware that this is not natural. Like, this is something that is significant responsibility and accountability on men. Great. See, responsibility has come up, right? On men, that you have to, like, can you imagine that you have to go to work, and you have to earn money, and you have to provide for a family, etc. It's not natural, right, to do that. But we do it in today's modern day and age. I think one is to kind of accept that this is a large responsibility. One that many times people have to shoulder individually. And this is not to say that women don't work or women don't earn money or women can't earn money. But it's always about how much choice does one have, right? And that's the bigger one. And I think that's the one that creates mental load a lot more than anything else. The way to do it is A, is to be aware, and B is to, I think, emotional awareness is super important. So there is like an emotional wheel of 256 emotions. It's a classic psychiatric tool. To be able to put a word to the emotion actually helps a lot. So if you're feeling angry, is it anger? Is it betrayal? Is it irritation? Is it annoyance? There are like 1,000 kinds, right? So to know what to call it is actually a significant step forward in knowing how to handle it. Some people take a few days to manage anger. Some people take a few minutes. Some people take a few weeks. You'll see that people, you know, kind of deal with anger as an emotion very differently. So to know where you lie on that circle, to know what it looks like, and then to kind of articulate, to say, for example, someone like me, I don't like to have a conversation when I'm angry because I always have bad ones. I will always say the wrong words. I will always make it worse. I will especially make it worse on WhatsApp, where text, you can be a lot more caustic on text than in voice, right? That's what they say about, when someone is angry, you should let them talk because that's what they've been dying to say for the longest time, right? So for that reason, if you can kind of step back, withdraw yourself from the conversation and have a discussion with whoever, it could be your colleague, it could be your boss, it could be your partner, to say, hey, can we discuss this in 2 days, or can we discuss this in a few hours, or can we have a meal and have this? So that's the one way I would kind of at least urge men to at least be a lot more self-aware. Don't withdraw. Address it head on. It might be uncomfortable, but please address it.
Great. No, thanks. I think that perfectly resonates with how a lot of us would be thinking. How can men balance ambition, career growth, relationships, and self-care without burning out or feeling like, you know, they're constantly failing in one area?
Yeah, I think generally find more things of purpose. It's very natural to find your thing of purpose to be your, you know, to your work or your family. And that's okay. That could be 90-95%. But 5-10%, take out time for yourself. Find purpose outside. I think the easy cheat code on this is physical activity. Like if you love cricket, go play cricket with a friend, with your friends once or twice a week. Football, go do that. Join Cult Fit. There are now, frankly, in urban India, like there are no excuses for this. Really, you pick up a sport, you will find 3 people who will play it with you. Pick up badminton, you will find a badminton court around. Especially Bangalore, you will definitely do it. So, isme yaar ye purpose, and I think getting better. Men like activity. Men like action. Men like getting better at stuff. So it could be an instrument. If you're a musician, pick up a new instrument or learn the instrument or singing, whatever. Something which you can interact with other people, make it an activity and do more of it. Build that as purpose. Because I think, men are very unidimensional on purpose. Like their work and their children and their partner and maybe aged parents at some point, that becomes purpose for them. They are not, women are very multidimensional. Women derive purpose a lot more, or identity also, from their social circles, from their siblings, from, you know, their, other communities of social interaction. Men don't do that as well. So doing that and, you know, kind of, we are social animals at the very core. And we are not going to fight wars or grow crops for the most part. And we are not disposable anymore. So we are going to live long lives. So making those lives, you know, fun and meaningful beyond what society might, or what evolution might actually demand, I think is up to us a lot more.
Yeah, no, perfectly. I think there is a need to shift from time management to more energy management, and then, you know, where our energy is need to be like channeled. And I think it's also for managers to maybe sort of soft goals on how you're checking on, you know, your team on whether, you know, they're able to balance all of that well. Thanks. If there's any follow-up on this particular point, yes, Chirag.
Yes, Shantanu, I'm just looking at this screen also, a little bit of follow-up. Is this got to do with our evolution where men have always gone out to get food, earn living,
etc. And have you seen some societies, how have Western societies now adopted to this? Are we like, as you mentioned, that we are still young in terms of being a democracy? Is it got
so No. In fact, I think quite the opposite. I think in India, India the nation state is young, but India the civilization is probably the oldest. Right. So we, in fact, compared to the West, we are actually a lot better in the sense that the West has developed into a very individual-driven society. There are individuals, which leave home at 16, 17. Relationship with parents is significantly independent. A lot of therapy research also is around individualistic societies, where a lot of times, for example, if you see Western shows, a lot of the frameworks, a lot of the conclusions of therapy sessions are, bad relationship with parents and, bordering on self-love at the risk of alienating. That's a very unique society. India and like Indian civilization, Asian civilizations, China, if you see, are very family and, kind of joint, where, discussing things with your family is probably the first most important therapy in intervention that a problem needs to have, right? So on that front, I think very different societies, very, very different. But a lot of what has happened, na Chirag, is that because of social media, a lot of issues are you consider them to be your issues, even if they are not your issues. So the number of young men and women in India who feel very strongly about Israel and Gaza is crazy. Like that's not your issue. Like your issue is the dirt in Yamuna, or your issue is is frankly how maybe how we deal with caste politics in India. Those are our issues. But because on social media you're seeing, during COVID it was about Black Lives Matter. It's not a thing in India, but it becomes a thing for most young people because you associated with whatever you're watching online, right? So it confuses people a lot, right, in terms of what matters, what doesn't matter. And then I think when it comes to masculinity, a lot of global issues have become Indian issues. So a lot of the chatter on masculinity has actually come from individual societies, doesn't exist. A lot of patriarchal issues that actually emanate from India don't see the kind of chatter that they should, by the way. So it's an interesting one. I have one question on WhatsApp, which I'll take. Why do we say men have to earn, but now it is equally important for men and women both, and to relate when it comes to marriage? It's an interesting question. I think it's great to have women in the workforce. I think most societies, I think the stats on this are unquestioned. Societies progress when women have labor empowerment. So when women become financially independent, societies progress, because fundamentally, it's because the chances of the next generation being financially resourced go up significantly when both father and mother are well resourced, right? So I think managing double income or double financial resourcefulness as a home or in kind of nuclear families is now becoming the challenge. Having said that, our entire education and work careers are in direct conflict to the process of motherhood. Right, so our education stretches well into the 20s, sometimes if you're a doctor, late 20s and early 30s also, while your prime period of healthy motherhood is actually is in your mid-20s to maybe early 30s. And this is something that is probably the biggest disservice to women that we have done, is to not be able to design social structures of education and careers to kind of at least get them wrapped up by the time. It's not like you can't finish education by the time you're 20 or whatever, right? So I think there is a significant amount of solving that we need to do. You can't have people studying till they're 28, 29 and then kind of expect them to be moms also. They're expecting them to work also. At some point, people have to take calls and men have to stand up and say, if motherhood and raising the children is something that a woman wants to focus on, then the person has to earn. And that's how responsibility is divided. So you can't have 50-50 on everything all the time, but aggregated over like a 40-50 year marriage, hopefully you can kind of do more for the other and do less depending upon whether you're a man or a woman. So I think earning is one of 10 variables in my view. That's just the easier answer in this world. whoever asked that question, I hope that answers. Yes, I think Shreya was raising her hand also.
Yes. So Shantanu, there's someone in office. I had this discussion probably 2 weeks ago when they said that they really want to help their wife in, you know, the household chores and in cooking when it comes to cooking something once in a while or every other day. However, since his mother lives with them, he is afraid of judgment. Now, how do you want to tackle this? I'm not sure if the person who spoke about this is on the call, but the reason I ask is because we're talking about two generations here, and to be able to kind of bridge that gap and bring everyone on a level playing field to understand this issue that we're talking about, it's very crucial. So what do you think should be done in that scenario?
Yeah, I think, again, it has to be understood why this happens. Okay, so the identity of the mother in this case, right, who is probably a homemaker or probably someone who has derived a lot of her identity from raising healthy children, has come from creating, you know, great food in the kitchen and serving it to her husband and packing the dabbas for the kids. That's her identity. It's not that, it's nothing else. It's that she, like my mother, for example, has taken tremendous pride in the fact that both me and my brother are 6 feet tall, big people, while my father is 5'4 and my mom is 4'11. I'm not kidding. Chirag has met both. I have very short parents and my mom takes a lot of pride ki maine khana khilaya. So there is pride in that. Now, in some households, there is also oppression and, you know, forcing someone to do something they don't want to do. I'm assuming that in more cases than not, my core assumption is most human beings are good and well-intentioned. That's my core assumption to living life. So in this case, the identity comes. Now, in that case, one of the unfortunate side effects is we have raised the generation of spoiled boys who don't go into... We make girls do a lot of this work in, you know, growing up, you know, in terms of serving tea to guests or helping out in the kitchen, because we feel like they will derive their identity in the future the way I derived mine today. That's the mother's point of view, right? So we coach girls on doing it. We don't coach boys on doing it. So boys have this weird thing where they've grown up spoiled. Everything has come in the hands. Everything's come on the table. No one's told you to do it. So if no one's told you to do it, you don't do it. But I think when you are in an equal partnership where there is income coming in from your partner and she's also tired and she goes to office and frankly, she goes to office maybe even on her periods and it's like very difficult for women. You have to step up and grow up, man. My mom has actually kicked my ass for like not cooking or not making a cup of tea. Even though when she's around, she doesn't want. So she also has to struggle with that a little bit, how to do it. I think for boys, just step, be adult, yaar, in front of your mom. You're not a boy. You're a man. Tell her, ki boss, main bana dunga chai. Or, you know, like, let me do it. And it's okay. It might be awkward twice or thrice. But your mom will be extremely proud of the son she has raised if her daughter-in-law feels pampered by the son. And this might seem very, like, it might seem unnatural for a lot of boys. Ki nahi, meri mom, it's not the case. Very deep down, every woman also is like, wow, you know, my son is pampering his wife. And, you know, she's whatever. Do it, man. Like, it's okay. It's not hard. Also, it's not hard. This whole thing around kitchen work being difficult is so random. It is not hard at all to put together a basic meal for three people. It takes 30 to 40 minutes and basic hand-eye coordination. It is not difficult. If you can do a job at GoQuick, you can 100% put a meal on the table twice a day. So, like, just do it. Like, I wouldn't kind of go.
Thank you, Shantanu. Thanks a lot.
I think typical of, you know, our parents' generation is more like my mother wouldn't want me to cook for my wife, but my jiju should cook for my sister.
Very, like, you know, it's a defining trait in our parents' generation also. I saw one more hand raised. Ananta, you had a question?
Filter is an accident, so yeah.
Okay, great. Moving on, we spoke of how young people today get influenced by, you know, all that's happening on social, right? What we also see nowadays, Shantanu, is young men become leaders at a very young age. And in many, you know, still struggle with ego and imposter syndrome. What is the most underrated leadership trait modern men should embrace today to foster positive work culture and integrate their personal values with business?
I think being a good human being is important, man. I think being empathetic, and this is an ungendered question, right? I think I would say leadership involves giving first and then taking a lot lesser or a lot later. That's I think the way I would think about leadership. If you're younger, I think the idea is to become a good human being and be generous upfront. We find it hard, by the way. Society is self-serving in a lot of ways, right? And we protect ourselves in a self-serving society by being self-serving ourselves. And that becomes a very bad spiral. So the ability to break that spiral and to step up and say, I will give and I will be a leader of men and women because I will be generous, I think takes courage. And for younger people, it takes a lot more courage because you have a lot more at risk. So I think just to do it earlier and frankly, find role models to do it well. Like there are few and far between, right? So to find, like for example, you know, my co-founder at Bombay Shaving Company is someone who is deeply generous and puts himself last and eventually comes first a lot, right? So I think that's the whole core of being a good human being. I have some messages on WhatsApp also, so I'll just quickly look. I think there is one question on understanding of patriarchy. Yaar, bahut hi complex topic hai. Frankly, I don't understand this very well. I do know that it comes from land ownership. A lot of, as human beings, we were kind of a herd. We were herds that went from place to place gathering fruits and vegetables and eating them along the way. But once we figured out agriculture and water systems, we kind of planted ourselves in one place, built out land pockets, and that's when we kind of built homes. And then, because men were working, the land pocket was in the man's name, and hence women, when they got married, they had to go between kingdom to kingdom or land parcel to land parcel, depending on how you look at it, right? And that was where patriarchy actually was born. And I think a lot of this, end of the day, it's all about money, right? And a lot of the way social rules were written were around protecting the wealth of the family or the future generation, actually. And hence, the final say is the man sitting at the head of the table, the family serving the male interest, is all comes from that a little bit. And it's very complicated because it's centuries of evolution, which I don't fully get. But I think, for example, you have come to a very specific question here, helping out our parents financially, which may not be consideration for the partner. I think if this is a partner question, you and your partner, I think putting down a shared manifesto of values. This is something I will urge everyone on this call. If you are not married or if you are dating seriously and looking to get married, please put this down. What is our shared manifesto of values as a couple? Because we'll have to rewrite a lot of the things that we have four parents, right? Two on this side, two on that. Four of them will have four very different world views. So what is our relationship with money? Where do we want to live? What do we think about religion? What do we think about having children? What do we think about, and ask the tough questions. If we adopt a child, will we leave as much to the adopted child as we leave to the natural child? It is amazing how much we think, of course we will. But you'll be amazed to see when actually it happens. Because people who adopt are actually the most generous of society, we'd assume. But you'll see that their wills are actually very, very skewed towards the natural child and not to the adopted child. It's sad in its own way because most people don't adopt. So who are we to say? But that's the thing. Like, what is our shared set of values? And ask the tough questions, write it down. And then one of them will be, do we take care of our parents financially? Do we budget for this? That this is a budget for both of our parents, which is four people, for healthcare, for living, for traveling, whatever. And some people might need it more than the other. So, for example, if one set of parents is poorer than the other, then the poorer ones get more allocation of this budget. And that's a shared value. You can't say that I earn more, you earn less, but my parents are rich, so I won't allocate so much to yours. No, that doesn't work. It's an equal partnership. And if that doesn't work for the other person, then the marriage should not stand, frankly. Yes. So write this down before you get married, because India is a place where getting married is so easy and getting divorced is damn hard. So a mistake of this nature is broadly irreversible, right? Without significant cost. So I would say do it. Have the chat before.
Yeah, I think it's the typical equity versus equality debate sort of. To my final question, Shantanu, if you had to create a men's starter kit for the new generation, what three things would go inside?
Male starter kit. I would say, you know, I think get in touch with positive codes of masculinity. Like, follow people who display masculinity well in, you know, in your worldview. Like, if you are a cricket fan, then look at good cricketers who, like, and it's not very hard to find good role models in your world. It could be people you work with and so on. So I think that's one, which is just a list of people who I look up to as men for being men more than what they do for a living. Second thing is, I would say, you know, just a toolkit for emotional awareness, like being aware about what you feel about things. And third is, I think, being unapologetic about one and two. Like, it's okay to want things as a man. It's like, and to kind of really, like you said about energy management, a lot of times men find themselves in situations, you know, which make them feel apologetic about being men. Like, you know, discussions about gendered crime start feeling personal. If you, for example, have a partner who does not get along with your mother, and it's both of their fault, frankly, where that is happening, a lot of that blame comes, like you take a lot of that guilt on yourself. So I think I don't know what it would be, a toolkit for being unapologetic while being a very high quality and, you know, highly productive man, I think is something that I would try to create for the person. How do you think modern masculinity can include both without feeling like one cancels out the other? I don't think they're in conflict to each other. So someone has asked whether being emotionally open and being disciplined are contradictory. I don't think they are. We have this weird worldview that if we are disciplined, we have to be stoic and we have to not express ourselves. We can be disciplined and emotional at the same time. One is about expression, the other one is about activity. They're two totally different things. So discipline is about waking up in the morning, going to work, going to the gym, you know, showing up in a timely way, not being lazy. That's what discipline is. And emotion is about sharing how you feel and what matters to you. And you can absolutely do both. The best way, I think, is to be disciplined about your emotional awareness. I think that's the interesting middle point on this one. Traditional therapy models don't work for men. It's not like they don't work. I think they have not evolved yet fully to account for men. Also, like, you know, a lot of times, a lot of pharmaceutical developments and clinical trials have happened on men compared to women. I don't know whether you guys have read a book called Unbreakable, but why weren't women tested for many number of antibiotics and vaccines and so on? Again, a lot of times women and the feminist movement made the argument that it's because things were designed for men. It was not because they were designed for men. It is because men are disposable. And this is basically using human beings as guinea pigs. So we did not use women as guinea pigs because they are, you know, they are not as disposable as men. So there is the counter logic to a lot of this. And similarly with therapy, I think women have been a larger sample set clinically. So I think it's just that it's not evolved. I'm sure it will. Human beings are very smart people. So therapy will evolve. Right now, putting all your eggs in that basket from a solutioning standpoint is where I would say just kind of that's important to not do that. Again, expressing, there's a question around men don't express love and feeling for the other person. But in reality, men do tend to show more affection, or at least through action. I think love languages are very different. There's a very classic framework for love languages. I think if you've not read it, do read it. People assume that they have to be loved the way they express love. Like, so if I express love through physical touch or through words of affirmation or acts of service or whatever it is, I expect to be loved that way too. That's not the way it works. Other person expresses in the love language that matters to them. So if physical touch matters to them, then they'll express it that way. So I have to, like, again, in that shared manifesto, what is a love language? And between parent and child, between two siblings, it's important to figure this out. Okay, one more question. Opinion on, men always get scared of being judged as compared to women, so they don't express failure or speak in public. Top anchors, hosts are mostly women. I don't think so. I think men are actually very confident. We do have, you know, news hosts and, you know, talk show hosts who are mostly men. If you look at English and Hindi both, we do have that. are men being judged for having masculine views? Yes, I think in that one subset of the world, I think that is true. But again, it's important to find language. It's important to understand what the emotion actually is, because it's nuance is where everything is, right? You'll get judged for having stereotypical views, but you won't be judged for having authentic requirements or opinions on things which help people in general. So, again, that's my point of view. At what point do we consider a boy to have become a man? Is it defined biologically or does it come from taking on responsibility? Very good question. I think whenever I have a question of this nature, I always like kind of look at the Asian, you know, Indian scriptures. Like there is very clear, 6-7 saal ki umar mein the child goes to learn at a gurukul, comes back at 17, 18, you know, kind of depending upon whether they want to be an accountant or they want to be a, you know, warrior or whatever. Sometimes if they don't go, they become what their dad does. So that age, I think earlier was 16, 17. As life has extended and education has become more, I think it's become 20 to 23. We anyways are the species where kids adult latest compared to other species. We have gestation periods of almost 2 decades. But my view is, I think there comes one moment where a child leaves home for education. In our case, mostly it's 16, 17, 18. And then there's another where the child starts earning money, which is 22, 23, 24. I think that's in that window is when a boy becomes a man. And I think a girl becomes a woman also. I think good part is there is now gender parity on this topic, at least in my view. Yes, sorry.
Aman had a question. Aman, quickly.
Yes, right. So thank you so much, Santanu, for such a great session, first of all. Very insightful. Now, my question is related to, men who tend to lose themselves in terms of, you know, let's say their hobbies, their liking, their passion. No, why? Because of we face a lot of responsibilities growing up. Now, I'm the fortunate one here, but I've seen a lot of my friends, a lot of men who actually face the same situation. So what's your take on it, and how do we as men keep our sanity alive?
I think accepting that this is the other card that we have been dealt is important. Like if we come from a family where, you know, where let's say mom is a homemaker, father is, you know, a clerk, for example, where there is not much and there is not much inheritance. We are also a country where moving through socioeconomic strata in one generation also happens. So if that is the ambition, you want to lift your parents and, you know, your children in the future to out of that, I think a lot of that effort and burden will come on you. It depends on how much you want to do. What should not happen is a dissonance of desire and capability to invest time and effort. You can't say, I want all this life and, you know, big houses and big cars and, you know, CEO position, which I see on Instagram for my friends, but my ability to invest time and effort is actually much lower. You can't have that dissonance. So you have to calibrate your effort and your investment basis your ambition. The good part is that ambition is now there. Like the world is your oyster. You can decide to do whatever you want to do. I think cognizance that anything that like becoming a CA requires 3 to 5 years of crazy effort and cracking exams and understanding and studying and so on. So if you decide that this is what I want to do, then you have to know the effort you have to make to do it. That's the only way. I think dissonance there will be the problem. It's okay to not be ambitious. Say, my dad was a clerk, I'll also be a clerk. Or I'll ask my dad to give me 1.5 lakh rupees. I'll set up a kirane ke dukaan in my mohalla and I'll run that for the rest of my life. And that's okay. That's totally okay. Everyone has a place under the sun. But dissonance should not be there. There's a question, I think, do you believe there are gender-specific roles? I think there are biology-driven roles. So, I think if your biology allows you to have children, then you have to have children. If both of you decide to have children, I think there are biology-driven roles. And biology-driven roles then become nurturing roles or providing roles. And then they kind of... But, like, smart people can figure out where to draw the line on this. So, it can't go beyond that, is my view. Also, I believe that there are some things people have natural proclivity to do better than others. So, find out where your strengths lie. This is a classic startup thing, right? Do what your strengths are. Do them the best. So, find out your strengths in that relationship or in that situation and do those the best.
Great. So modern masculinity definitely isn't about muscles. It's about mindset, right? It's about being bold enough to care, being strong enough to ask for help, and being confident enough to be yourself, like cringe moments included. So thank you so much, Shantanu, for being the man who shaves stereotypes, not just yet, right? So it's been wonderful, and I think it's been very insightful. I think collectively, as a group, we've just gotten wiser. It's been my pleasure to be able to host you.